Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Queer Quadrant, a podcast where we, two bisexual filmmakers, examine cinema in all its cultural contexts and explore why your favorite four-quadrant blockbuster is maybe not as straight as you think it is.
Brooke?
Jordan.
Do you know what's cool?
What?
Going to college.
For sure.
Do you know what's cooler?
What?
Male intimacy. I think that's this movie's biggest pitch.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's basically like, sure, you can go to high school, you can go to college, but you know what you can't get at either place? A nice, loving, tender friendship between two men.
Well, and coworkers also.
True, right.
Something exactly. To consider as love. It's like, is this okay?
That's true. There's a lot of questions that this movie is really asking the audience to think about and mull over.
How many lines is it crossing? Should you really be sleeping with someone when you're an undercover plant in college?
I mean,
there's a lot to think about.
This one, we'll definitely get into it, but in rewatching 21 and 22, you know, had to get the context for 22.
Oh, naturally.
Forgot that, you know, Jonah Hill kisses a high school-aged Brie Larson?
Right.
Dude, totally. Well, what I forgot about that is that they were doing the sort of Jennifer Lawrence thing with Brie Larson for a while, where, like, when she was sort of too young to be an adult, they were having her play an adult, and mm-hmm. then when she was fully in her 20s, they're like, now you're a high schooler.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sort of just like, this is an adult woman, but it's not good in the movie regardless.
No, it just feels very weird.
And like, they make it a point earlier in 21 to be like, I'm 18 and my parents don't care about me, so you know that she's a legal adult when they're making out. But it's so bad.
Nasty.
It's iffy.
No. I know. It's... Ugh. The Jennifer Lawrence comparison I feel like is super interesting. Like, I feel I would love to compare and contrast their careers now, and sort of I feel like now it's like a focal point for both of them, because I feel like Brie is very much like, I mean, obviously in the Marvel camp, but other than like Unicorn Store, has she done anything like remotely indie or dramatic? And like Jennifer Lawrence is now like pivoting into like, you know, she's going to be doing more dramas or like rom-coms again.
Right.
Well, Brie had, like, what is it, Glass Castle?
Oh.
Like, I know her initially from,
forgot
like,
that
short-term...
movie.
I know. No one, I don't know anyone who's seen it, but I was a huge Short-Term 12 fan.
Oh, of course.
Same.
So, like, I mean, iconic movie.
Yeah, and, like, one where you sort of hope that lead performance is, like, she keeps doing stuff like that. And I think Glass Castle is supposed to be, like, a return to form, but, like, I don't know anyone who saw it, and I don't know if she's any good in that movie.
Mm.
She and Tessa Thompson are apparently cooking up something. They, like, teased it on Twitter or YouTube or whatever. I mean, I would hope that the announcement of their
romance.
Engagement,
yeah.
But perhaps not.
Yeah.
But, like, maybe they're cooking up some fun little indie that they're going to produce together.
That would be great.
She's so just good in Short-Term 12. Like, she comes out of the gate in that movie and you just feel so raw. I mean, the whole cast of that movie is incredible. And of course, like, I feel like that's the
popped,
Twitter thing
like,
is they
no
all
other.
Ended up going somewhere.
Yeah.
But
she's so human in that movie. And I feel like all her performances since then have been like progressively less human.
Yes.
Where,
yes.
I mean, I understand that she's like an alien in Captain Marvel, but you see her in things and I'm just like, do you know what like a real person does?
Yes. Yes.
She's
it's,
got
in
it
a way
in
that's
her.
Kind of frustrating.
She's got it in her. She just needs to like unlock
the
it again.
Material.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's maybe mm-hmm. a little bit, she's coming kind of into like the Rami Malek thing where you're like, are you a human? Like,
she is a human. She
well,
is a
no, she
super
been.
Relatable YouTube, you know?
Is it?
It's super relatable.
Okay.
But like, I mean, like not really. It's relatable like the way that a celebrity
right,
can
like,
relate.
You are a millionaire.
Another
okay.
like J-Law, Brie Larson parallel is that she clearly wants to be like one with the people. So this is a podcast about Brie Larson.
I would love
Brie Larson stan cast.
All sorts of Brie. We also dive into like the cheeses of Brie.
Got
you, know.
You. Other Brie's mm-hmm. Allison.
Sounds
perhaps.
Amazing.
I would love that.
No,
anywho,
no, no.
You were saying.
Hi, I'm Brooke Solomon.
Jordan Gustafson.
And we love talking about cinema.
Brie.
We love talking about being queer. We love talking about queer cinema. And here we are talking about it. On mic, and this is week number 3 in Chatting Channing 2021. The month of April when these will be released is one Channing Tatum's birthday.
Fully dedicated to the man.
An underrepresented king who we
I don't know about underrepresented.
Who we felt like we needed to bring some cultural significance to.
Bring it back.
Yes.
Yes.
So
yes.
During the month of April, we are covering his greatest and gayest hits. This week we are covering 22 Jump Street with probably a little bit of 21 thrown in there for good measure.
We'll cross the street, maybe.
Mm-hmm. And joining us today is Fran Hoffner from Bright Wall Dark Room. Hello. We are so happy to have you here.
What a
treat. I'm so happy to be here.
Thank you. Oh my gosh.
I think it's important right off the gate. What is your relationship with Channing? Like, how has it evolved over time? Just what is it?
My relationship with Channing is that, so I grew up in Illinois where we have PE required all 4 years of high school.
Naturally.
So I never got to like opt out. And I always took a dance elective in lieu of having to like run laps.
Oh, love
and
that. Yeah.
During like finals week, every single semester I took dance. So, you know, like 5 or 6 times over the course of high school, like they would just put on Step Up.
Oh, iconic.
So, I mean, maybe that film's from what, 2007, 2008? So maybe I didn't see it 5 times, but I definitely saw it like 2 or 3 times at the end of a semester. That was sort of my initial connection to Channing. And then I don't know when I saw him next. I've still, to this day, never seen what is perhaps like one of his sort of like queerest movies, She's the Man.
Oh, you've never seen it.
A good movie.
I've never seen it. And I know people love it. I also like grew up without cable, so I have like no Amanda Bynes connection.
I also grew up like without cable, without watching anything, so
she's never seen a movie. Is
truly
a fun
never.
Fact.
Oh, that's amazing.
Mm-hmm. No, but I'm mostly familiar with Amanda Bynes from purely She's the Man, but like I think the first time I watched that movie was freshman year of college or like sophomore year of college.
For being I guess the one person here with cable, I didn't have a relationship with that movie, like, as this is the third week of saying it, but I've now seen every Channing movie. So this year,
Jordan watched every
like
single
3 weeks
Channing
ago was the
Channing
first
movie.
Time I saw She's the Man. And obviously, let's just say maybe the politics haven't aged that well. Maybe, you know, there could be some underlying elements that are a little problematic.
I
but
actually
like,
haven't seen it in so long.
It's like fine. But like he's great in it and Amanda is great in it.
Yeah. And so. He's like just by leaning enough in the movie. But that's actually not, it's not one of the ones that we're covering. Because
no.
We like felt like we needed to do both the Magic Mics. And then we had to slot 22 Jump Street in. And then next week to wrap it up, we're covering The Eagle with him and Jamie Bell as Roman soldiers.
Do you not know, are you not super familiar? It's the highest grossing movie at the box office. It beat Avengers Endgame.
Wow, no, I haven't heard of this. When you say The Eagle, I think of the sort of whatever the Hugh Jackman, Taron Egerton one was, which is like Eddie Eagle or
yes,
something.
Yes, yes.
That also, I feel like, has some weird queer undertones just
probably.
By nature of who's in that movie. But no, I feel like I saw nothing in between Step Up and 21 Jump Street and Magic Mike.
Wow, that is, you are honestly... Good for you, because you missed out on just a lot of schlock. You really saved yourself.
I guess I've seen I saw Public Enemies in that space, but he's like, he's in seconds of that movie.
He gets killed off in like the first 5 minutes. I was so excited to rewatch that movie because I was like, okay, we'll see how this has like aged. I remember seeing this in theaters or whatever. And obviously like certain elements of it, specifically one Johnny Depp, makes it a little difficult to rewatch. Good movie though, but then Channing appears and he's just running through a field and gets shot from behind, and that's it.
I was always so annoyed when I learned, I've read a little bit about that time period. I really love that time period in like Chicago history and like Midwestern history. And in real life, when they shot Pretty Boy Floyd, like his last words were something frankly iconic, which is they were like trying to ask him something and he just said, "Fuck you, I'm gone," or something, and then died, which is like, that rocks.
That's incredible.
And I wish they had let him say that.
Oh, I mean, you should put that on like a tombstone. I would love that.
Fuck you, I'm gone.
I feel like honestly that's something that Channing Tatum would say.
I can see it. He delivers his fucks very well. There's a lot of fucks in the 21 and 22 Jump Streets, and
yes.
Like he never hits it too hard, but he hits it enough that you process it. I don't like when people mumble their fucks, you know? It's like, that's a well-earned R rating. Mm. Like,
yeah.
We gotta know.
You really have to deliver.
Yeah.
I did forget that these were R. So when certain stuff was happening, I was like, oh, okay.
Oh, right.
This makes sense. Yes.
They are a sort of sanitized R.
Definitely.
That's
very
mostly
sanded
just the
down.
Language.
I feel like Lord and Miller have like a very broad sensibility. I mean, like you look at it like with the Lego movies, I feel like this even like feels like Lego movie adjacent, or like Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs. Like all the humor feels the same. It's just like dialed up a little more edgy. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I spent a lot of time thinking about the two Neighbors films while watching this, which feel sort of like they're contemporaries. And
yes.
I just felt like at least Neighbors 1 is like That's a nasty movie. And it's, like, gross and mean-spirited in a way that, like, these are not. Probably because, you know, Lord and Miller are very, you know, there's sort of sweeties. They want to have that sweetie vibe where as neighbors is just rude.
Like, raunchy, I feel, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Rose Byrne was probably great in them just because I feel like I'll throw my weight behind her for anything.
I feel like I remember, I've never seen them, but I feel like I remember the talk around Neighbors 2 being like, you know, it's kind of a secret masterpiece, but like because of specific performances like Rose Byrne and like
Amy Feldstein. I was going to say, for Chloe Grace Moretz, right? You know, because she's such a shining star.
I don't like Neighbors 2, but there is that sort of like drum beat of like it's a secret masterpiece or it's like secretly very progressive. I think it's sort of progressive politics are like very shoehorned. Like someone read a WikiHow on like gender equality and then was like, time to write this script.
Like, did you know that women can do things? Yeah.
Like I think one of the funniest things in 22 Jump Street is that Jenko takes a human sexuality course and like all he seems to really get out of it is that we can't use gay slurs anymore.
Absolutely. Yes. He, you know, used to use homophone slurs or whatever he says.
Yeah.
I mean, it is, I think, my favorite part of the movie when he corrects, you know, the man and tells him what he can and cannot say and then headbutts him, you know, like a himbo would. It feels like the most Channing Tatum thing to do in that situation.
Yeah, it's very much like sequel, like Lord and Miller, where like, okay, this is definitely like a scene that you can nail, and so we're gonna give it to you. I mean, he works with them again later in the Lego movies as Superman. Yes. They know how to use the man.
Would he be a good Superman?
No, I don't think so. I think like voice wise, yeah, but
he's too graceful.
Yeah.
I think, and Superman is so clunky.
I mean, he does destroy cities, as Zack Snyder has showed us, you know.
And I don't know. I think that he just is a little too, I don't know, he is a little too much like an everyman. I feel like you want
he's
Supernatural
like
to be,
almost.
Or Superman to be like a little otherworldly, you know?
A little alien. Because
he is an alien.
Mm.
Yeah. But this movie, 22 Jump Street, made me like really think about Channing Tatum in a superhero movie. And like,
oh, you
why
mean
haven't
Gambit?
We gotten that?
Gambit? The movie that has been in production hell since 2009, I want to say.
It's definitely never getting
Right? It officially got canceled, but it passed from like Gore Verbinski and like 100 different people have been attached. Like, not David Leitch. Oh my God. Other crazy guy who's doing Tom Cruise in space.
McQuarrie?
Oh my God. Not McQuarrie. The other one that he does everything with.
Doug Liman.
Liman,
yeah.
Yes. Thank
Liman,
you.
Yeah.
Liman was attached. So it's never going to happen. But Channing Tatum famously, you know, said that he could do a Cajun accent. So, you know.
What?
We'll see.
Oh, no.
Okay.
No.
I trust him. I think that'll go fine.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, there's nothing that could go bad.
Oh, my God. But I mean, like, look, I saw him hanging off a helicopter in 22 Jump Street, and I was like, where is this man's superhero vehicle? Someone should have gotten on this.
Oh, why haven't they made him, like, a Fast and Furious villain? That feels sort of, like, easy, fun stunt casting.
If he's, like, John Cena's, like, stepbrother, so Vin Diesel's, like, brother adjacent, I would love that.
Okay.
Yeah, totally.
He comes in as a villain, you know, in the 10th one. Mm-hmm. Like, they have to defeat him. Everyone gangs up versus Channing.
Is F10 the one where they're going to space, apparently?
Probably, yeah.
Didn't they announce they're going to space?
Unless it's this coming one. But this one, the new one's been pushed off another year. So
right.
It's just like...
We're never going
to
get
it. I don't even know. Where they stand.
All I know is that in the one coming out that may never come out is that they use a magnet to swing across, you know, two mountain peaks with a car, which I think is very fun.
Oh, right. Yeah, and they bring someone back from the dead again.
Yes. All important things.
It's all coming back. I remember when that trailer dropped, and we'll never get to see it.
Look, it's like 2020 didn't exist, so it's fine.
Yeah, sure, why not?
Mm-hmm. Anywho, with 22 Jump Street,
yes.
Because I feel like I have a very specific relationship with this movie because it came out the year that I was going to college. It was very much like, I'm going to college. The characters are going to college. And
this is what my college experience will be like.
Sort of. And then the sequence in which they're going through like all of the stuff that they brought to college, while it is very like stereotypical, like 90% of it, I was like, fuck, like, had that in college, like that's what I brought, you know. Felt very seen.
You had a prime college setup. Jordan and I met at college, so I definitely saw your sophomore year dorm room, the whole setup. Yes. It was good. You had the beanbag chair.
Did you have a Lambo poster?
I did not. That was a big thing that I did not bring. His obsession with the Lambo is so tender.
Where did that come from? It's not on the first one, is it?
No.
But I saw this movie for the first time 3 days ago. So there's that.
Had you seen the first one?
No.
Oh my God.
Oh, cool.
But when I was in high school, I feel like that was when 21 Jump Street was at the height of its power. So watching it was basically watching like a series of interconnected GIFs and clips that I had already seen where I was like, oh, that's what that's from. Oh, that's what that's from. Oh, I had no idea. So I felt like I knew the movie on some level, on the cultural level, before I had even seen it. They're funny though. They're funnier than I expected. I was very against these kind of like dude bro comedies when I was a little younger, and now I feel like I've matured enough to appreciate them on an intellectual level.
These are imbibed with that kind of sweetness though,
right?
You know, I definitely saw this one in theaters. I'm trying to remember if I saw 21 Jump Street in theaters. Maybe that's the one I sort of watched at home and then was like very ready for the sequel. And I remember the sort of the critical consensus around the first one being like, oh, this is pretty good, actually. My mom was sort of a real late 80s, early 90s Johnny Depp stan. And so the lore of 21 Jump Street as a TV show was very big in my house. I must have seen the first one in theaters because she just always talked about 21 Jump Street. And I wanted to know what the deal was. But
if you saw it with her, did she lose her mind with the Johnny Depp cameo?
I must have seen it with her, and I think so. So either we saw it in theaters or I saw it with her sort of at home. But
I lost
my
mind at the Johnny Depp
cameo.
It's
crazy.
I had no idea.
And then he just gets shot through the neck.
Yeah.
And it's just so unexpected.
It delivers a whole monologue.
I think I must have seen it in theaters because it hadn't been spoiled for me at all. Mm-hmm. And I think it's one of the great sort of unspoilable cameos in a movie of the last decade.
It's really fun.
Yeah.
And say what you will about Depp now, but he delivers all that he needs to in his 5 minutes of that film.
It was such a good performance that I was surprised. I was like, oh my God, it's Johnny Depp acting.
It's probably his best performance of the last decade.
Oh, that's so sad.
Right?
But yeah.
I mean, not the Lone Ranger.
I literally can't think of, oh, that's what you went to?
Alice in Wonderland, the Lone Ranger. What?
I can't think of anything.
Black Mass. Remember Black Mass?
Look, being from Massachusetts, it's really, really upsetting to watch that movie. I feel like when you're from somewhere and a movie set where you're from, you like overanalyze it sometimes. So just watching that movie is like nitpicking things, but it's just so egregious across the board that it's just really hard to watch.
Yeah, I think what's so frustrating about that movie too is like Depp is quite bad in it, but he's not even the worst.
No.
In that film, which hurts.
Benedict Cumberbatch's accent.
You should never, ever pump a Boston movie full of Brits.
No.
Ever. It's a nasty thing to do, even to Boston.
God, he can't even do an accent. Like, his Benedict Cumberbatch's, like, American accent is very much like, I am doing an American act. He, like, can't do it.
It's fine.
Like,
I've heard worse.
Doctor Strange is just like...
I've heard worse. I just don't understand the obsession with, like, if someone is so definitively from a country, why you would, like, try and make them be from somewhere that they're not. Like, there's no world in which you look at Benedict Cumberbatch and think, that man's American. It just doesn't
We don't
compute.
Make guys who look like that.
No.
No. You know, guys, we do look, make, oh my God. I had it right there.
It was so close.
It's Channing Tatum. He feels like the most American bred like boy.
Oh yeah.
Yes.
Like, to
totally.
The core.
Please.
Well, and then the main thing I remember about this movie is this jump started my big crush on Wyatt Russell, who I also think is like one of our most American boys.
Yes.
An absolute delight in this movie. An absolute treat. We talked about it last week. Oh, sorry.
Just between this and Everybody Wants Some, I swoon for him.
That's what I was gonna say. Last week we talked about Everybody Wants Some and how it sort of has like the bros hanging out energy that Magic Mike XXL has, and Wyatt Russell is just so good in that movie. It's just a stoner who just floats in, drops some sage wisdom, and then just leaves the movie.
Yeah. Here for a good time, not a long time.
Oh my God.
So good.
He's underappreciated. He's not in enough stuff. It seems like you should be able to just like throw him in so easily.
Well, I mean, he was in Ingrid Goes West.
Right.
He was the titular star, not the titular. He was the star of AMC's Lodge 49, I think, right?
I
I think
honestly
that's the
don't know
it.
What that movie is.
It's Show.
Oh God!
Right, it's like Turn Washington Spies. You know, it's like one of those AMC shows that like exist but don't exist.
And like two people of everyone you've ever met in your whole life watch it, and they're like, "It's really good."
Yes, yes, exactly.
I don't doubt that it is, but I'm never gonna watch it.
No. I mean, there's no appeal. But
there's too many.
I mean, he's so tender in this movie. Like when Wyatt Russell and Channing are just sitting on the field goal post, just like talking about like how close they are and how their synergy is just perfect together, how they're a perfect match made in heaven. I'm like, yes, you two boys are. This is beautiful.
They should have kissed. I don't often actually say that like, oh, these characters should have seriously kissed. But like, I mean, they really should have.
They should have kissed. That's the college, non-college relationship I think would have been acceptable mm-hmm. in this case.
Absolutely. I mean, they're meet cute. Oh my God. Oh my God. I don't know a better, I was trying to rack my brain of rom-coms from the past like 10 years that were able to get chemistry as good as these two men during their meet cute, and I don't have one.
It's a good, like, you know, trope to pull from.
Absolutely.
When it's like you have two guys, you know, with one brain cell, you put them together and they can suddenly share the one brain cell that they have. Like, that's a good bit.
It's so tender.
They did a good job.
It's really great. I think it throughout both films, Tatum also always has the better arc. It's always sweeter and nicer and drawing on a more intimate thing than, like, the Schmidt character is just always trying to get laid, which I'm repulsed by, even though I think Jonah Hill is so funny in these.
I completely agree. I have a question for you. I don't know. How do you feel? Well, I guess just how do we all feel about Jonah Hill now? Like present day Jonah?
Present day Jonah has regained some of the admiration that I had for him. But during the mid-90s period,
yes.
I don't think I've hated anyone more. Every time he showed up in a turtleneck and his glasses, I wanted to die.
Yes. I never saw that film. I don't even know that I was too annoyed with him for it. I know people don't like it.
Speaking of weird kisses between underage people, has one as well.
He pulled a lot of sensibility from the Jump Street days. No, but like, I don't know. I feel like it was one of those things where it was like, does Jonah Hill really need to go through his indie auteur phase backed by A24 and like being on the cover of Variety up and coming directors and stuff like that.
Exactly, yeah.
And I think that it didn't help that it was right in tandem with Bradley Cooper, who was like actually doing it on a better level.
Yes.
So it looked worse in comparison.
My thing is that I feel like this was the inkling in Jonah Hill's brain to kick him towards his auteur, you know, art focus, because when he becomes like an art boy in this, I feel like he was acting and there was something that got activated while he was giving his, you know, slam poetry that he had to become an indie auteur.
I mean, these films are like nestled in between his prestige run. Because you've got Moneyball before 21, and then you've got Wolf of Wall Street this year also. Mm-hmm. War Dogs. War Dogs is like the kind of movie I keep threatening to like watch on a plane and have never seen still. But it does feel like one day I'm going to have an amazing plane ride and watch that film. But I always think he's funny, and I always want to see him be funny. He's so good in This is the End.
Oh my yes. God. Hip. Channing, also great in This is the End. I mean, This is the End in general. I feel like this and the 22 Jump Streets, like in tandem, were so much of like my guy friends' humor. Whatever the Hangovers had on middle school and how damaged it like made our society, like the 22 Jump Streets and This is the End's like sort of like paved it back in a little better direction.
You know what it is? It's like these are like four quadrant, big, wide, like guy centric films, but they're also quote unquote intellectual in a sense because they're meta and they're about like
this
how
one,
we think
so.
That it's a movie. But I mean, like, This is the End is the same thing. You have a bunch of celebrities all playing themselves and you're like, oh no, I understand it. You know, it's on a different level. It's saying something.
It's also very funny.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's like, it's acceptable to like them and also like be smart at the same time.
And This is the End. Who would you want if like all those boys were there and you had to be with one to survive? Which one are you staying with?
Rogan.
I feel like that's probably the good answer.
I'd say Rogan too. I feel like he is maybe the only acceptable answer.
I feel like maybe Danny McBride, just because of how unhinged he is. You know,
but
like
that's not a bad option, dude.
Just because, like, no, I feel
I'm
like I'd be
with
safe.
You.
You know, like I feel like I don't. I don't think my body or my soul would be okay at the end of it, but I know like I would be alive, and maybe that's what matters, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's a hard world out there.
It's a tough world out there.
You know,
it's getting even harder.
I feel like the meta thing, though, is a very dividing line for a lot of people. Like,
is this movie meta?
There's simply no way of knowing.
I don't know. I just could not tell.
We'll never know.
I like it, but I am kind of a sucker for meta stuff just because every time they do it, like I know that it's like a cheap shot, but it's working for me anyway. Like it's like when there's an ad on and you know that it's an ad, but it's working on you anyway and you don't want it to be, but it is. Mm-hmm. But where do you stand on the meta? And Fran, where do you stand on the meta?
I take no umbrage with the meta. I don't mind the meta at all. And I think it's funny here. I would rather have a slightly more cynical metafictional sequel that is certainly not as good as the original than a sort of overhyped secret masterpiece sequel.
Got you.
Or something that, you know, tells us about the way we live now.
Yes.
I would rather have 22 Jump Street making fun of itself the whole time and perhaps stumbling into some profundities than the other way around.
I feel like this is the acceptable form of meta for me, where I, like, obviously Deadpool, I feel like has almost worn me just so much down to the core of meta.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's just so hard to watch it now because I feel like so much of content is now going for the Deadpool appeal versus what this movie was, because I feel like this movie was sort of like riffing on genre and sort of like it's like less blatant. I don't, it just somehow feels less like egregious than Deadpool does, if that makes sense.
It was earlier, so it has that on its side.
Yeah.
And 21 Jump Street as a franchise is like the kind of thing you really dig out of the bin versus the enduring comic book kind of thing. I haven't seen either of the Deadpools. I'm trying to opt out of the like Ryan Reynolds industrial complex as much as possible. But though I love Detective Pikachu, but this feels like a weirder pull, which is why I like it.
Yeah.
And it's why I had hoped, and I still haven't seen, I hoped that Baywatch would be kind of good, though it seems as though Baywatch is not any good.
I truly could not make it through Baywatch. That's so rare. But like, Baywatch
more
was
like
exactly...
Maywatch. I'll remove myself.
It's like Baywatch was what I expected these movies to be, and I expect sort of like all movies of this genre to be. It was just so horribly unwatchable and like sexist, but is trying to pretend that it's not sexist. And like,
is Efron good in it?
No.
Oh, that's even worse.
He should be, but it's like he's not quite in the zone of making fun of himself enough yet, and I think it's probably like a script issue too. Anyway, nobody should watch Baywatch.
That's
it's
sad.
Not good. There's not enough abs in the world.
Efron's more fun when you can root against him.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. I don't ever really want to root for him.
Like, he's great in The Beach Bum, and he's a scumbag, which I feel like is like if that fits into it. I mean, in High School Musical,
but he's
it's like the only
that,
one
you know?
You're rooting for him. I'm trying to think of like other Efrons where you're rooting against him.
Here's the
thing.
Well,
Neighbors.
Oh, true. Oh my God. Does it all boil back to Neighbors?
Neighbors really cracked open Efron for me. Neighbors, like the 1-2 punch of like Neighbors and We Are Your Friends. Because I think the issue with We Are Your Friends is like, I never doubted that a hot DJ wasn't going to make it. He's like, am I going to make it in the DJ world? I'm like, yeah, fucking look at
you're
you.
You're a hot, straight, white male. You're fine.
Yeah.
You don't even have to be good at DJing to make it.
He was not your friend.
Yeah, he was. No, he's not my friend.
I feel like Efron is missing the inherent likability that someone like Channing Tatum has. And that's why Channing Tatum is so much fun to watch, because like it is very hard to hate the guy.
They feel
He's
like adjacent.
So nice.
It is. We've been asking this question of like who fills like a Channing Tatum void, like who are the similar comps to a Channing, you know what I mean? And Efron, you would think would fit into that because he kind of has like empty head energy at times,
but he's a little,
like 17 again.
He's a little too smarmy. And he, yeah. I think that he like as a person is a little too concerned with like his
image
to fully unlock the like likability factor.
Interesting. That
like,
makes sense.
You buy that he's only doing roles that he thinks will like help prop up his star persona.
Versus like popping up in a cameo in like a This Is the End or in like a whatever it may be that Channing would do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That Joseph Gordon
Channing just seems to enjoy himself in film.
Yes.
He's having a good time.
I mean, I would love to have been on the set of this movie. It must have been such a blast. Like, no matter what, even though like the spring, like obviously the spring break stuff is like messy, but like I would love to go on like a little vacation with Channing and Jonah. Like, I bet that was so much fun.
Yeah.
The highs of this movie and like the comedy highs are so good. And I think it makes the lows look worse because Lord and Miller, I think, did tap into a really good zone with the sequel. And so then, I don't know, like, I think I mentioned this last week, but they're so fucking beholden to the three-act structure that it absolutely tanks the best parts of like the actual relationships.
Well, I mean, they literally in the first one they go like, and that's the end of act two, like when they're doing the Peter Pan play,
right?
Which is like, I literally hit my like remote and I was like, pause, oh my god, yes it is, of course, and then play. But it's, you're so right, it is so beholden to it. Which I mean, like, Nick Offerman makes a joke of it about like in the beginning where he's like, one of you is going to run away and one of you is going to, you know what I mean? Blah, blah, blah. And like, of course that happens. But
of course,
like, you do sort of wish that this was almost more of a hangout movie where it's just like fun adventures in college, you know?
Right. Fran, you mentioned Everyone Wants Some and how everybody wants some.
I love that movie.
It's a masterpiece.
And that's like the prime college hangout movie.
Totally. That's just a movie about how great it is to be young and hot. And I agree with that thesis.
It
There's
is
nothing
so
better
great.
Than that. Yeah, I mean, the thing about this film being so meta is that I wish they were brave enough to break out of it then.
Yes.
Rather than just play to that the entire time.
Totally.
Right.
I like wish there was something. I'm like, I want 22 Jump Street to be experimental, but I kind of do.
Yes. I think that if you're going to commit and be like, we are going to riff on ourselves at every given moment, which I find extra hilarious because like the first movie is good. Mm. So, you know, they're already taking a weirdly big swing with it. And it, there's so, so many self-references. They might as well just go like full throttle. Even the end credit sequence, which is,
oh, I mean,
maybe my favorite.
Awesome.
That's where like maybe you go like experiment, like that feels experimental. Like,
it does.
I would love to see, mm-hmm. like, what if like if they did literally just replace Jonah Hill in the third act of this movie? I would love that. Like
that'd
be
awesome.
So funny.
Oh my god, who released this? Let's see.
Fox, I think, right? Or no,
MGM and Columbia. I'm sure MGM would be having a fucking meltdown if they even tried anything like that. But it does feel like Lord and Miller were like, we're gonna pack all our weird shit into the credits.
Bill Hader.
Anna Faris.
Uh-huh. Looking so great good. In a bomber jacket.
Mm-hmm.
She deserves a renaissance.
The world. Yeah.
Right? I mean, the House Bunny is a masterpiece.
It's so good.
Mm-hmm. Now that we've separated her from Chris Pratt, I feel like
I know.
She
Get
has
him out.
Yes.
Potential to
bring her in.
Yes. Fly
These are the
on
moves
her
we
own.
Need to make.
Yeah.
On like a 21-22, I feel like we've been going back and forth. Do you, like, I feel like you've sort of hinted at it. Do you find yourself liking the first one more, like, as just as a whole, or?
Yeah, the first one actually feels weirder to me, ultimately. Weirder and braver and stranger with, like, the Depp stuff. And I think the sort of the jokes about not knowing what is popular in high school anymore is so funny. And so, I think, relatable in that they like, can't figure out why the popular kids are all, like, vegetarian and gay. And that cultural shift, I think, was very significant at, like, I've worked in and out of food service with, like, where I'll be, you know, a decade older than some of my, like, teen coworkers. And I'll be like, what do teens care about? And they're like, we're so sad about the environment. I was like, I couldn't have cared less about the environment when I was 17. and so I think they're playing with, like, funnier tropes in that one. And I think, I love Dave Franco. I'm really all in on the Dave Franco camp. And so I'm very amused by him. I'm also like, where did Dakota Johnson go? I love that Dakota Johnson is randomly in 21 Jump Street. So
So good.
Wild that she just appears. She's just also just obsessed with Channing Tatum in that movie. Just always eyeing him.
As she should be.
Yes.
Aren't we all?
Correct. Right. Oh, and I miss her gap. To see her gap again was like, oh, so romantic.
A little tease.
And forehead on full display. No bangs in 21 Jump Street.
I know.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Her purest form.
And this one, I just don't think this one really has anything interesting to say about college.
Yeah. It's like college kids like to smoke weed and sell drugs and drink a lot of beer and occasionally play football.
I sort of, because I went to a liberal arts college. I think it almost would have been funnier if they were at like a lib arts college where it's not the tropes of like, you're either poetry slam / improv or you're playing D1 football.
Yes.
I just want to see like a retooling of college tropes the way they did with the first one.
I feel like that is a great pitch right there. Like that would have been great if you just see like one of them has to do like, I don't know, be like an English lit major and the other one has to be like a film student or just anything along that would have been so much more engaging.
Real artsy shit. DJs or, you know, radio station NPR people.
The radio kids or just like the ultimate Frisbee kids. The Quidditch. Yeah. Something like that, I think, just would have felt newer.
There's so much probably homoeroticism within the Quidditch kids that they could have milked for this. You know what I mean? Just in terms of what's going on there. Because, I mean, like, they're obviously so leaning into any element of homoeroticism within this movie.
I appreciate that they tap into the football homoeroticism. The whole football sequence when, like, you know, the boys are passing the ball off to each other and it's the announcers are like, they're like working like the exact same person, reminded me of that Jenny Slate bit when she's talking about Gronk and Tom Brady and like how football is just about being like, if I get the toy, I'm going to throw it to you. And if you get the toy, you can throw it to me and it'll be so great. Okay. I love you. Bye.
It literally is.
I appreciate that aspect of it, but it's not as funny because it's just like, it's football. It's low hanging fruit.
Right.
I'm sure it was like the only choice though for Channing because wasn't he supposed to play football on a scholarship and turned it down or had to give it up or something?
This movie's like weirdly metatextual on like Channing Tatum's life and career because he one gave up like a college, as you were saying, a college football scholarship.
Right.
Two, there's a joke within this about like them wanting to go to the White House and how Channing thought it was a great idea to be like Secret Service agents. And this is the year after White House Down comes out, which it flops for Channing, which is so upsetting. And it just like sort of like a lot. If you just like read his like Wikipedia and just like dig into a few articles, there's just like weird little plot stuff throughout this where it's like, oh, like Channing's kind of like riffing on himself, which I feel like post when he starts to produce everything, like he had a hand in producing this, the Magic Mics, you just start to see like Channing work in his real life into his art, which is kind of beautiful in a way. And like
interesting life than a lot of other people who are in movies.
Right. Absolutely. Like his early modeling career, which we haven't even talked about yet on this series.
Abercrombie and Fitch, baby.
And like being on the cover of Out as a male model and all this kind of stuff. And obviously like the stripping backstory. It's all fascinating. And I think that he works best on screen when he is playing a version of who he is in real life, because like it's very hard to divorce him from that. And like he knows that and he's able to milk it for all it's worth.
Absolutely.
Which is nice.
I mean, there's no bit in this where I was like, this is not how Channing Tatum, like there's the Jenko of it all, sure, but I'm like, this is probably how Channing Tatum would react in any of these situations.
Oh, of course.
What I like about him in this one is that it does play to the physicality of him, because I think one of the joys of watching him on screen is just he moves his body the way no normal person can, be it in a super athletic way or a super graceful way. And so I like that the football stuff lets him like run around and scramble, and he's really sort of, I love when he like climbs up the house, even if that's just sort of a cut to a stunt double. Like I love that as a detail about him, which you don't really get any in the first one.
No,
right. he's always got the better, more beautiful arc.
When he like jumps down, when they're like running like post football, he's in like all the football gear and he's like jumping down all the stair levels, but instead of running down the stairs, it's like kind of intense. Like I feel like he also, as we said before, he does his own stunts,
and mostly.
I feel like he probably was trying to do that or like had done that in another life or something.
He seems like the kind of guy where you'd be like, hey, can you climb up this 3-story building? And he's like, yeah, no problem. Jump, parkour. And then like is suddenly on the roof. He just seems like he has that ability in him.
Yes. It's great. I love it.
He's so crazy.
He's good. I want him back in things.
I know. His directorial debut is upcoming. Dog. It's supposed to come out sometime in 2021. We'll see about that. But it's some weird dog and military movie. I'm a little nervous, to say the least.
We're both a little nervous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What would you want to see him in? I feel like we'll get like into the movie, but like what kind of, do you feel like this is the vehicle you like Channing in? Or like what mode do you want to see him kind of go forward? Because I feel like he's sort of aging out of certain things. So it's like, would you rather see him kind of do something new, or do you kind of want him to play on old tropes on himself?
Yeah, he's 40. He like...
Yeah, he's getting old.
He's up there.
He's gonna... Yeah. It's the end of his life. I mean, no. That's how God forbid. God forbid.
I'm like, oh, God.
No. I tell my students I'm 70, and I used to think it would deter them from wanting to know how old I was, and now it's had the reverse effect where they are looking for clues. I like him best when he's in the Soderbergh pocket. So, like, the Magic Mike, sure, but, like, Side Effects and Logan Lucky, I love him in Logan Lucky.
So good.
Which feels more like a character than a lot of other things he's done.
Yeah.
I would just love him as, like, a Soderbergh bit player, frankly, and... I mean, I think Joseph Gordon-Levitt's star has kind of fallen, but if they ever make their buddy musical, I would love to see that.
Have you seen, there's a short online, I forget the name of it, it's like blank and blank's 11th date, but it's a short that Joseph Gordon-Levitt directed starring himself and Channing Tatum.
Oh, I think I have. It's old though, right?
Yeah, it's like, it was filmed in like 2011, I want to say, like right before the 21 Jump Streets or like right after. And it's one of the weirdest things, but they have very fun chemistry in it. And like they've been in bad movies together, but I feel like the two of them are both kind of nerds in a way. So I feel like they would be able to pull off something very fun.
They're dweebs. They like filmmaking. They like being in movies, you know, they're kind of just there for a good time. Yeah. Yeah. That short is truly unhinged.
Yes,
it is so weird. Yes. Like
it's like they're CGing themselves into a like paper, like I don't even know how to describe it.
It looks like a Victorian pop-up book. They talk like people high on LSD, but also kind of like turn of the century fancy men. It takes place in like an air blimp.
Yes.
It's so weird. It did not give me a lot of faith in JGL's directing and or writing ability.
Mm.
Cannot say it gave me a lot of confidence on that front, but Channing Tatum is great in it. Though. Has a nice twirly
little
mustache.
We're not Don John heads.
Oh, well, look, I care about like a few things and you know, oh God, fuck, can I get him at? All I know is that boils down to my porn. Channing is great in that cameo though. Holy shit.
I've seen 10 minutes of that film. I was like, you know what? I can't do it.
I can't pull off the trailer.
I was going to say, I'll give you one better. I didn't make it through the trailer.
Wow. Yeah. Incredible.
Oh, his body, his ride, there it is. Mm-hmm. His family, his church, his boys.
Yeah.
His girls, his porn. I love this trailer. It's one of the craziest things to exist. And like, for better or worse, one of the most memorable trailers of the 21st century.
Absolutely. It's incredible what that thing is doing. And I mean, that movie just on a whole is just like so weird to examine. Like Scarlett is making so many choices just with her voice.
Like brassy broad routine, which never works, except for maybe in Hail Caesar.
In Hail Caesar, right.
Another good Channing vehicle.
But I mean, Channing pops up in that movie, just in a trailer, him and Anne Hathaway playing like a love story. And I love that for him, that he can just be slotted into something like that.
You sent me the clip, and I also couldn't make it through the clip. I couldn't, I can't do it.
You're off the JGL train.
My brain just shuts off when I hear Joseph Gordon-Levitt with that accent.
Hit record, Joe.
Here's my question for Jordan. Having not seen these like Dear John or the like, how is he in those?
So it's weird. Basically, there's like a few different ways to analyze Channing Tatum's career. It's like, how good and gay is he in this movie? How is he entering the movie shirtless or not? Because that often also will dictate if it's a good movie or not, weirdly. Like, not just in like a terms of like looking at him, but in terms of like his like energy to the performance. For instance, like in his first movie, Coach Carter, he's just like a very small bit player in it with Sam Jackson, but he enters shirtless and he's great in that movie for like 50 seconds of screen time that he has. But
oh my God, Jordan,
most of the stuff that he's in that's like early in his career is very bad because he's trying to be very serious, and I don't think he understands like how he functions. So like in Dear John, he's trying to play like most things where he's a soldier, you can pretty much just say they're bad. But he is very good in The Vow with Rachel McAdams. Terrible in Dear John, great in The Vow. And I think that he's good in The Vow because I think he's tapping into something that we all want, is like to save, you know, the love of your life, and have the love of your life just happens to be like Rachel McAdams, and the two of them are like very fun and have very good chemistry together. Like, the movie's batshit insane, but they're good, if that makes sense.
Didn't you like him in 10 Years, that other rom-com that he's in with...
Channing Tatum's first produced credit, yes.
With Jenna...
Jenna Dewan plays his real-life wife. Well, so he and Jenna were married at the time. She plays his girlfriend, soon-to-be wife.
Gotcha.
And they have just very fun chemistry. It's like a hangout movie. Oscar Isaac
is in this?
He's in it, and he's... Not only is he in it, he sings in it. It gives like a Llewyn Davis performance. Like, they have a karaoke machine that he goes up to sing, and he goes, no, 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 turn that off. He goes backstage. He grabs a guitar. He sits down and then just plays a love song for everybody. It's insane. The movie's...
I maybe have to see this.
It's not great.
But it's not that bad,
right?
It's not
that bad. Justin Long is in it, weirdly.
Sure.
It's just like a lot. It's like, I don't know. I feel like all these people were friends, and they all decided to make a movie, and it happened. But it's good.
Sure. I skipped my high school tenure, so maybe I need this to tell me what it could have been.
Chris Pratt's also in it, playing ostensibly himself. So
sure. Good double bow with Romy and Michelle, maybe.
Mm.
A very niche genre, but maybe something we need more of. High school reunions have always like fascinated me. Maybe that
would
could
you
be...
go to your high school reunion?
No.
Yeah, I feel like Fran, you did
no?
the smart
no.
thing.
No, although I guess my tenure hasn't happened yet, but okay.
Mine's coming up.
I don't know how yours worked, but I think that whoever is like president of the senior class is ostensibly supposed to like organize it. Were you president of your senior class, Jordan?
VP, baby.
No. President specifically. Good.
But you'll have to help. You'll have to run the Facebook group or whatever.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Oh, fuck.
Because my like student government was absolutely useless, and there's no way they'll ever put together like a 10-year reunion. Like, they weren't even the type of like overachiever student government people that would be super into it. Like, it's the last thing that they would like to do. It was the weird popular kids.
That makes sense.
They scheduled ours at a weird time of year, so I couldn't make it home for it. I otherwise would have leapt to go.
I'm like torn because I feel like half of my class, but like everyone was closeted, and so like one came out. And the minute just a few of us went to college, it was like, oh, I'm bi, oh, I'm gay, oh, I'm, you know, like everyone just started coming out. And it's just like, well, it could have been nice, you know, like if anyone just had this conversation with each other during high school. So like maybe. I kind of would like to have a conversation with the people who like came out also.
You should do it.
Now am I going to have a 10-year? Am I going to make my own 10-year movie?
Yeah, you can do it. And you can like 11 years? Construct a whole arc for you. Mm-hmm. It'll be good.
Great.
Maybe that's 23 Jump Street. They go back. They go back instead of going forward.
True.
Yeah. To find out who's gay.
Yeah.
That's what I would have loved to go for. And right? I met up with like out on the East Coast with someone else I went to high school who's also sort of out and queer. And she was like, where were all the lesbians when we went to high school? I'm like, oh, they were there. Like, everyone was there. Just, you know.
You had to find them.
Very, very deep. It's crazy to look at. It's what, like what you said earlier, Fran, about like the generational divide with high school. I already feel like if I was in high school 5 years after I actually was, it would be totally different.
Oh my God, yeah.
On so many fronts, but especially the like coming out front.
Yeah.
It's just like there was like this whole wave of acceptance that hit like right after our time.
We missed it by like a couple years. To be like, it's socially acceptable to be out and queer in high school. I mean, it was obviously acceptable, but it was just like there was still
a lot of
pressure and stigma. Yeah, and I feel like this movie also is like very much in that time period. Like,
what a segue.
No, not even trying. Not even trying to segue. I'm just like, this movie is like playing into that a little bit more, where people are starting to talk about like things that you could like, what is okay to say, like in terms like to queer people or whatever, a little.
The rise of social justice.
It wasn't even like they could make a joke about it, but then you go to school and like people would still fucking bully you if you were queer.
Oh,
you know?
Of course.
So
I mean, that is like one of I think the best aspects of these movies is like tapping into the out of touch thing and just like how people are constantly evolving, because so often it's about like you have someone that's out of touch and then you have someone who's with it, and like by the end it's some very, you know, average arc of them meeting halfway in the middle, where it's like you can learn from both generations and find a happy medium. But I feel like these movies are actually about like dragging yourself forward progressively.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah,
because they both have, you know, with Schmid in the first one and Janko in the second one, this thing of like, I'm gonna stay here, like this is better for me, and then be like, no, you have to move on, you have to keep your job.
At least like Janko's is a little more believable, like with Schmidt being like, I want to stay in high school. I'm like, would you, honey?
But I feel like if I had the chance to go back to high school and magically become like a popular kid, because of course we were like weird art kids, you know, I can totally see the appeal. I feel like there's something.
I'm so scared to go. I would never go back to high school.
I would never go back. But
absolutely not.
Like, no. So weirdly appealing, I feel like, for the rest of your life about like, well, if only I could be popular, then like it would just unlock a new level of power. Of course it doesn't. But like, I think the appeal is still there no matter what.
I see you. Mm-hmm. What would you, of like these things, if you were going to be 21 Jump Streeted, like what would they your ideal world, what would you, I mean, like this is like, I kind of guess the ending goes into it, but would you go to like dance school? Like what would be the one you would want to go to?
Okay, so I guess the idea is like, what are my skills that would serve me best
exactly
in the field undercover?
Yes.
I mean, I guess I would go to film school or or like art school, fine art school. Like they have that one where they go to
the fine arts. I think it is literally like fine arts.
Painting academy.
Yeah.
How about you?
I kind of want like a fun one. I was trying to think like what would be the funnest
of those
to go to.
You asked the question, but you don't have an answer prepared.
Of course I don't. No, I was hoping you would answer first so I could think of it. Do you have one, friend?
I mean, I think maybe culinary school is like... where I would feel safest, but I also think doing like a seminary or something religious would be a lot of fun.
That would be a blast.
Yeah,
a lot of, and that's very gay, also.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yes.
Have you seen Novitiate? I think is how you pronounce it.
No, I haven't.
Yeah,
I know I need to. I'm really excited for the Verhoeven lesbian nun movie, though.
Oh my
Same.
God, yes.
Novitiate.
And I read that book, which is like,
shit.
That court case is very interesting.
God, it's such like a weird...
I literally don't know anything except that it's just a Verhoeven lesbian like nun movie. That's all I know about it, and that's all I want to know until I go in. But like now I want to know more. That I didn't know there was a court case or anything.
I actually did not know. It was,
or
like,
a book.
Real
this
life
is, yeah, so it's based on a nonfiction book that is just about this court case. Because, you know, they tried these lesbians.
Classic.
Well, because one of them was like... perhaps feigning visions. I guess the gist of it is she was like having visions or seizures, and then was like, you know, I'm very holy, I have to like report back from my visions, and I'm gonna need an attendant who stays with me every single night just in case the visions are too much for me. And then it's like, oh,
Fran.
They might be too much for you, sweetie.
Fran.
That's the greatest finesse that I've ever heard.
That's very iconic.
Oh my
like,
god,
like holy prank is awesome.
That's so cool. And you know, Verhoeven's totally going to handle that with a very light touch. We'll not lean into it at all. Absolutely not.
I got to respect.
It's going to be really delicate. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Jordan often talks about how like he likes to see directors like do unhinged things. Like you spoke about the Baz Luhrmann Elvis biopic and how you're excited because like it seems just off
but
the
why?
Walls.
But why? Right, exactly. Like why would he do it? I don't know, but I'm in.
That's exactly the energy that Verhoeven is bringing to this. But Novitiate is a good primer. It's basically, you know, very in a similar vein.
Is it like nuns falling in love?
Yes, needing to feel desire as a young woman in a
yearning.
Convent. Margaret Qualley's in it. It's good.
Oh, okay. Mm.
Mm-hmm. I do love the credits stinger in this when they go to the priesthood to seminary school.
That's when Seth Rogen comes in.
Yes, I mean
giving
the
big Jewish energy.
The horrible image of Channing Tatum in like a priest collar is just so unnerving.
Oh, father!
It's so good.
I mean, like it's like, you know, Phoebe Waller-Bridge, Fleabag,
original hot priest. But he's like that man's face should never appear like. Near a priest's collar. It just does not make sense. It's like in the first Magic Mike when he goes to the bank and he's in that weird
he's wearing
suit
glasses.
With the small little glasses and he just looks so wrong.
My favorite moment in Magic Mike XXL is like the beginning montage where he goes home by himself to have his like lonely night in, and at one point I think he's using a spreadsheet on the computer and I'm just like, no, you're not.
Yes.
You don't know what you're just typing blindly into this. You have no idea how to use this program.
Yes.
Absolutely. Literally, he's just like, numbers, yes.
Yeah. And like 22 Jump Street pushes him so far in like, obviously not the dumb jock, but like the
head
easygoing,
empty.
Head empty, no thoughts, jock stereotype the way that 21 doesn't. I feel like he's relatively normal in 21. He's just kind of bad at school. And in this one, he really has no thoughts except football and working out.
Well, I love the point eventually the movie comes to where he's like, God, is like all of this building up? Like, should we only be working out? Like, is there more to life? And then he recognizes that he has to go back to the love of his life, Jonah Hill.
Yeah. This is a rom-com, leans into the rom-com so hard.
The Mark Evan Jackson of it all.
Right.
This whole, couples therapy session.
Actual couples counseling.
Yes. I mean, if we're going to talk about the queerness of this movie.
Let's do it.
They cover, it's, very much tender in the sense that it's, obviously playing on all these tropes, but it's done in a way that doesn't feel, offensive. They're making these jokes. The only very gratuitous thing is I feel when he's reaching up into Jonah Hill's shorts to grab the grenade from, you know what I mean? And it's oh no, that's my crotch or whatever.
Don't grab my dick.
Right. But the whole couples therapy thing feels very tender, and at no point they hold hands and they're scared of holding hands, but it's not because they're two boys and they're scared to hold hands. It's because they're not sure if their relationship can sort of tolerate that.
Right. They're mad at each other.
Exactly. It's all done sincerely and earnest. And I feel that's why it avoids it could be totally seen as problematic, or cause I feel Lord and Miller at least know that within the genre, there's just so much
homoerotic.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. As we've talked about before, 80s, buddy cop movies, et cetera, you know?
Right.
The stuff with Tatum and Hill, I think, is really sweet, and I think acknowledges, even in just sort of an intimate friendship, that you can't just always grow consistently at the same rate and then be okay with it, and acknowledge the weird sort of, you know, jealousy and whatever that permeates it. Where this movie, I wish they had just cut it from the film in general, is that Rob Riggle scene in prison, which I think is just so nasty and gross. And
so
the only kind of conventional R-rated comedy thing where I'm just like, I hate this, make this stop.
It just feels so unnecessary.
Awful. And it's it's not funny.
No.
And it does not add anything to the movie. And it's a weirdly shoehorned cameo, even though it is nice to see Dave Franco's face on screen again. But yeah, it's obviously weirdly transphobic and just gross and such horrible low-hanging fruit.
That feels
that scene, and then the opening casual racism scene, which I was not expecting. That came right out of the gate, very strong, or two that should just be gone.
It's awful because the whole quote "my name is Jeff" thing is fucking everywhere. At the time too, I looked up Channing Tatum shirts, and 90% of the shirts, if you just Google Channing Tatum shirts, it's little name tags that are "my name is Jeff," etc., things like that, and you're like, from this movie, that's the quote that you're going to be drawn to or you think is funny.
That's so... I didn't really remember very much of 22 Jump Street at all, except maybe only the credit sequence at the end. Right. And I was telling my friend I was going to watch it. I was like, and I don't remember anything about it. And he was like, all I remember is how funny it is when Channing Tatum says, "my name is Jeff." And I was like, I don't even know what this... I don't know what you're talking about. And then thankfully, you know, it's 6 minutes in. But I was like, oh, this is the thing. I mean, it is funny, but I can't believe that's the main thing.
Right.
That's what blows my mind is there's so much more rich material within this to throw on a shirt. The whole Cynthia thing, throw that on a shirt. If you want a Rupi Kapoor style design, you know what I mean? Or something.
Yes.
I don't know. Or I don't know. There's just so many better lines than that, at least for me.
What is good to me, though, is I do feel a lasting cultural point of impact from this movie is the, hey, man, you can't say homophobic shit anymore. When that scene popped up, I was like, oh, right. I've seen this. I recognize this. I know he's going to headbutt the guy. So that's exciting
and, like,
on a certain
even
level.
Even when they're faking giving a blowjob, neither of them are they make it a line about it, but it doesn't feel
it could be so
bad.
Much worse,
right?
Because I think that both the Channing Tatum and Jonah Hill are I don't know. It's just they're willing. The bar is literally so low, but they're willing to, you know, not make such a huge fucking deal out of it because they care about their public perception or what have you. I think that it also works a little bit smoother because it's technically a callback from the first movie. So you're like, oh, right. Okay. They've already done this territory. They know what's up. But yeah, the Channing monologue is so great.
It's
very sweetie.
Yeah. And like, that's exactly what you want. You want him to like stand up and defend you.
He like apologizes for his previous like homophobic behavior, which like, I don't know about you guys, but like watching this movie. So when I originally saw it, it had not come out yet. And then watching it like coming out, and obviously like for this, to like for the queer subtext, it like changes how you view things. We've talked about this a bunch before.
How we break our brains every week.
Exactly. Yes. My brain is always broken, but you know, just more. But like with this one, I feel like it was really nice watching that, because I'm just thinking like, maybe there's like one person that it ever impacts, but like who recognizes that they might have like said those things in the past and like could have atoned, or at least it's like a positive thing to have in this movie, at least like having your lead like come to terms with their problematic past like that. Because I feel like it could have been so easy for him just to have said the line but not had his apology. But by him like apologizing, I feel like that's very sweet.
Significant in a way.
Right.
Yeah.
And like, I mean, like obviously you notice so much more queer stuff during this, but yeah.
Well, it's nice because he doesn't make a huge deal out of it, but he also like is able to remain like super macho, super cool dude, and like still, you know, apologize and then make all these comments, and it doesn't change anything about his character. So I think that that is helpful.
Well, and I love when he asks Schmidt, like, I did this in high school and this was inappropriate. Like, did you know about this? And he's like, yeah, and it was inappropriate back then too. There's not this thing of like, well, 2 years ago or 7 years ago, you could just talk like that and that right. was okay, which is a how a lot of these generational conversations go of like, it was fine to say that. It's like, no, it wasn't. But you could be like, I said this in the past and now I know better, versus trying to smooth over how history was. Which I'm, totally. You're right. I'm grateful that's sort of what this does. And I wonder what it would be like to be, I don't know, like a 17-year-old who saw this versus a 24-year-old.
Yeah. And absolutely. Be like, oh shit. And I think that they know on a certain level what kind of audience they're playing to, because Jonah Hill has that throwaway line where he's like, oh, you take one gender and sexuality studies class and you think you're Harvey Milk. Like, they're aware. They're aware that this is like playing to a variety of different audiences that are here for it. So, and it's great. But it's very much in line with that thematic thing of like having to drag yourself forward, both in life and in like how people are evolving as you like get further and further away from the youth. Yeah, it's a good time. And like, I mean, totally separate from that, the whole Zook and Jenko intense bromance is amazing.
They're gonna like break him doing the fucking fisting, where they're gonna break through, where they're gonna be in the annals of history. It's just like line after line after line.
Why don't you tie your dicks together and get married?
Why don't they?
The whole breakup portion where Jonah Hill's like, or Channing Tatum is like, I think we should investigate other people. Like
an open investigation.
Right.
An open relationship.
Exactly. It's so good. And like, I like how committed they are to the breakup bit. And like, well, we don't really have to get back together. It can just be a one-time thing. We don't have to put a label on it.
And like at the end, Wyatt Russell is also like, you know what? That's who he should be with. And
exactly.
Like recognizes, you know,
he is the other man.
Maybe we have to have a fling now and then, but at the end of the day, we go back to who we're supposed to be with.
He
maybe
is.
This is like a meditation on romance and love.
Yeah. He's the homewrecker.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's good.
The hot blonde homewrecker.
Yeah, I mean, God, he's so hot.
We'll let him homewreck. Why not?
Oh, no question. Not even a question. There's so much. Okay, let's see. What else we got? What else you got?
But I guess there's just like, I think the thing with this movie is just going, there's just so many points in sequence. As you were saying, it's just like going through, it feels like a lot of skits at times, but stitched together in like a coherent way,
like little sketch bits.
Exactly. Yeah,
for sure.
I feel like a little more so than the first one.
That's why the three act structure annoys me.
Right,
like we were saying, it should be more experimental, because every time they go back to like, oh right, we have to have these guys fight now, or we have to like bring in the conflict, it feels disingenuous, because you can tell that no one really wants to include that, but they have to. But talking about like Magic Mike XXL last week, which is a totally like non-traditional structure and is basically just like a hangout movie.
What if we went on the road?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it works so much better in that way. Don't be afraid of unconventional structure, studios, blockbusters, four quadrant people. You can do it and it will be successful without your little three-act structure to hold you up.
How do we feel about when Jillian Bell comes in? Because I feel like she kind of gives like an MVP performance in the second one.
She's very funny. I remember not liking her at the time I first saw this and really liked her this time. I think I had to really divorce her from Workaholics Universe, which I used to loathe.
Mm.
But I think it's just sort of an isolated performance. It's funny. And what I was going to say that I like a lot about this one, this is no knock on the first, I'm glad they got more comedy people in this one.
Yes.
And that they just snuck a lot of really funny people in.
Patton Oswalt's one scene?
Right.
Amazing.
He never comes back.
The Lucas brothers, I love.
Quick tangent on that.
Oh, do it.
So the first time, hopped off the plane at LAX, moved into my college dorm out here, semester dorm out here.
Right.
First walk all by myself. My parents have left. I'm on my own. Mm-hmm. Walk into the Rite Aid, got to pick up some supplies. And they are the first celebrity that I saw in LA on my first day. And I was like, oh my God, you're from, had no idea. I hadn't seen their stand up or anything. Had only recognized them from this.
From 22 Jump Street.
Went back to find their comedy. But I was like, mm-hmm. Oh my God, you guys are from 22 Jump Street. Like saying this to myself. And then went back to my roommates and was so excited. And no one matched my energy or knew what at all I was talking about. But they're burned in as like the first LA celeb I ever saw.
I can't believe they were in that shitty Hollywood Rite Aid.
Yes.
That is, it's the shittiest.
The Gower Gulch Rite Aid, yeah.
It's so bad. I don't even remember the first celebrity that I saw in LA. My most embarrassing celebrity story, though, is that I met Tatiana Maslany, who is not a celebrity to anyone except for me, coffee shop in Boston. And I was so flustered because I didn't expect to see her in Boston.
Was that when she was shooting Stronger?
Made a total fool of myself. She was there for the Stronger premiere.
Oh, very cool.
Do you have
Boston Strong,
baby. Do you have a good celeb story? I guess you're more in the New York celeb gang. It's a totally different vibe.
New York's like, it is a different vibe. You get a real spectrum. I mean, I guess because it's on topic, I have seen Dave Franco.
Oh, boy.
Dave Franco came into my old workplace summer of 2019 and was very normal and very polite and tipped generously. So I have nothing bad to say about Dave Franco.
I have also met Dave Franco.
Oh, my God.
He came in to my work for a meeting, and he was also very normal and very nice, and he wore a very cool sweater, and he made small talk with me in the elevator, which I was like, you really didn't have to do that, but you did.
That's very
and I appreciate
sweet
it. I'm like an assistant. I was in charge of going and tapping the people in and then bringing them to the big meeting and asking them if they want fucking water or whatever. And he was cool, and I appreciated that.
No, it's nice when people have good manners. The other funny small one I have is that the week I moved here, I saw Richard Kind 3 times in 7 days.
What?
Oh my
Which was insane.
God.
I was like, is something going to happen with us?
Right, the second time you see him, you're like, this is a little odd.
Sparks
the
are flying.
The third one, though, you're like, Richard.
That's
gotta
crazy.
Talk.
Yeah. Within the span of a week?
Within a week, yeah.
That's kind
Summer 2018. It was a different world.
That's so fun. Oh my God.
Yeah.
He was having his hot girl summer. He was out about. Yeah. He was being
seen. He was.
Seen.
I saw him outside restaurants. The third time I saw him, he had a bike helmet strapped to him. So I was like, okay, so he biked here.
Hey, at least
so
he was wearing
cool.
a helmet that's safe. He's being a good protective citizen.
That's a perfect celebrity sighting because you know, he's not too big, but he's just big enough that you're like, that's Richard Kind out doing normal people things.
Yeah. Dave Franco's maybe the biggest. Oh, and I believe that I saw Bradley Cooper in Tribeca, which was crazy.
I think we can take that as fact. He seems like a Tribeca kind of guy.
Oh, absolutely.
On certain days.
I think I then later read that he lives in Tribeca. So I was like,
it's
this
like
must
have
been.
You have to do the research. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But he was, this was around Star is Born coming out time. He was like scruffy. He looked like shit.
Oh.
But I was like, I think that's Bradley Cooper, but he looks bad. But in a hot way.
Scruffy Bradley Cooper better than
I'm
clean.
I'm sorry. I
no,
never
totally.
Jumped
right?
on the Bradley Cooper train. Never, ever.
No, I'm obsessed with Bradley Cooper. Maestro. Maestro 2021. Maestro 2022.
Oh, very,
who cares?
It's, is it going to come out? Hopefully.
We'll
I'm
see.
Also so excited for him in Nightmare Alley, but...
Nightmare Alley is going to be so good.
What is that again?
That's
it's the new
Del Toro
where he's playing...
Oh,
like,
I didn't even know he was in that.
He's like a con man. Or a carnival man, rather. A carny.
Great.
Fun.
Right?
Great.
I'm like, I'm all in on this. Great. Good for you, Bradley. Get that check. That's his first post, Oscar role. We'd love to see it.
Good.
to tie it back to the movie, from the first and the second, are there like big sequences that also like stand out to you or anything that touch? Because I feel like the only, like there's the biggest joke that I think we have missed is the carte blanche, Cate Blanchett thing. Because that paid out like a slot machine for me.
I think, I mean, it's part of the same sequence, but I feel like I knew so much about the, oh my God, you fucked his daughter sequence.
Yes, yes.
Like,
when Channing, the light bulb literally goes off after like 30 seconds.
Yes.
Yes.
You know, it's funny and he's good, but I don't think it's the funniest sequence in the movie. It's like the My Name Jeff thing.
Yes,
where
yes.
You're like, this is kind of like a weird lowest common denominator pick, mm-hmm. but that's my sequence. I really love the Peter Pan sequence from the first movie. It's so pixie good. Dust, motherfucker. It's good.
I'm like trying to think of the big scenes. I don't love any of these like set pieces.
Right.
I hate when they're tripping. I hate like trippy sequences in movies unless that's the whole movie.
Did you like the one in 21 at all or no?
Oh, no, not really.
Yeah, it's weird. It's very much like a movie made up of very good small joke moments so that I feel like you leave it with a good sense, but then you actually break down the sequences and you're like, you know, they're not amazing. They're no. good. They're not amazing. But it's more like the zingers, like all of Jillian Bell's like old people zinger lines are mm-hmm. like a million times.
Anytime they say either of those guys look 40, it's very funny to me.
Every time.
Because they do. And they probably yeah. work. And, so it
and
works.
The more people call it out, the funnier it is.
Right, right.
Because it never breaks the in-universe thing. Like exactly. everyone just continues to accept it, but call them out for it.
Well, I mean, I feel like that's where the movie is successful, is that no matter what, like everything does feel in-universe. Like there's nothing that ever feels like egregiously like, oh, this shouldn't be happening, which is nice. You know, like I feel like especially with like a big studio movie, there could be like something that breaks that.
Lord and Miller are good, dude. Like yes. they know what directors. Is up. I like everything that they do. And I'm trying to.
Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs is a secret masterpiece.
Yeah.
Good movie.
Yeah.
Right.
They directed the pilot of like random shit like Brooklyn Nine-Nine and like will kind of like just slide in, do something great and then like leave again. Or we'll stay on like in a producing role like Spider-Verse.
Right.
Is just this lurking?
Is I guess like Lord and Miller just like are the only people who are making movie or things about cops where the cops aren't, you know, like the worst? Like how do we, you know, like in like these are the only two okay cops of all cops.
Okay, I got to say though, rewatching 21 Jump Street was really painful cuz really I hate is. That whole opening sequence yes. when they're arresting people.
Yes.
It fucking sucks.
Yeah. Yeah. Hard to watch police things.
I just don't think we should make movies about cops anymore. And that is that on
that's
that.
That on that.
I think 21 is kind of good about the kinds of people who are attracted to being a cop.
Right.
Yes.
Between the two of them. I sort of agree that we don't need cop movies anymore. And I do think both of these films kind of play into the like much maligned and rightfully so let's be cops tropes of like average Joes think that being a cop is just shooting a gun and car chases. It's actually a lot of paperwork, but then these films are like, isn't it actually funny when you do get to like shoot people? And I mean, I used to be really squeamish around violence. I'm way more desensitized to it now, but even so, I'm like, this is sort of really glorifying a lot of this.
Like weirdly bloody at times, or like things that you just they show you that just you don't need to see.
I feel like it's extra bad because it's like institutionalized violence. It's like, yeah, because you're a cop, you can throw a grenade into a helicopter and like kill everybody inside and it's fine.
I wrote this note at the end of this movie when like everyone has a gun at like the final shootout, and just that like guns I feel aren't good action devices. Like I would much rather enjoy like a sword fight or, you know what I mean? Like things like, because it feels just
combat.
You're just so removed from the action, especially at the end of this one. It just feels like there's so much shooting that it just, I feel like the whole third act kind of falls apart a little bit because it's just like, do we really care that much as much, you know, at the
yeah.
end of the day?
No, I tell people that I like action movies and they're like, oh, okay, great. So you like, you know, war movies and, you know, lots of gun heavy movies. And it's like, that's not the kind of action that is a proper action movie. Like I like the choreography of action where it's essentially like a musical, but with weapons instead of dancing. Like, you're John Wicks and you're Atomic Blondes and like car-based stuff like Mad Max or even like the Fast and Furious to an extent. But like designed action. I feel like it is very hard to design interesting things with a shootout unless it's like John Wick where, I don't know, he chucks guns at people.
Right. The whole knife sequence. Yeah.
Yeah.
But to bring it back on the queerness.
Yes.
Like overall, how do you feel? Because we had mentioned before when planning sort of this whole Channing thing, we were like, okay, what are queer Channing movies? And it's like, obviously the Magic Mikes, somehow the Eagle.
I'm excited.
Very excited. A movie that
doesn't exist.
But the, like for this movie, I remembered it. And I feel like the meet cute thing was what I had remembered and sort of like their relationship. But it is, I feel like, nice going back and watching something and having it actually be so textual and so kind of rich there. Did you, like, what was your experience? I mean, like, you had never seen these.
Right.
So what was that like, especially watching it for like a, through a queer lens? I feel like that
exactly
obviously influenced it a little bit, because I was coming in with the, I had seen this as a teenage boy remembering all these jokes and making these jokes in the hall, you know what I mean? Which I feel like there's still like a weird bit of nostalgia.
Oh,
like,
no, totally. Are you kidding me? You were like the prime target audience. Yes, I was.
You're not in trouble.
I was the demographic.
You were.
Unfortunately, like,
but it's fine.
I was the demographic from like The Hangover coming out all the way through. Like, I really was like on the front lines being shot at.
And it's okay.
The fact to come out comfortable in your sexuality, I knew, really laying down my life. You know?
Okay, all right. Thanks. It was almost nice for a minute. No, I mean, like I said, we tend to break our brains every week, and like every time two people are within 6 feet of each other, I'm like, okay, well, we can make a note on this. We can say that this is representation. But actually, I think I was like 45 minutes in and they had done the meet cute, but we weren't even that deep. And I was like, oh, I have enough to fill a whole episode, no problem. I just think that the Zook and Jenko stuff is like so consistent throughout. And then you also have the Jonah and Channing stuff like to go alongside it. And then they keep throwing in sequences like the couples counseling or like the blowjob homophobia 1-2 punch. There's plenty to talk about. I was pleasantly surprised is what I have to say on that.
To me, it doesn't read aggressively queer. I guess it is sort of more of a commentary on male intimacy, but I don't really get a queerness out of it that isn't like shoehorned in via like the meet cute joke. But I think, like, you know, when I was like breaking my brain thinking about this, I thought a lot about that Jenko character. As we see him in the 21 Jump Street flashback, he's very, you know, popular jock making fun of Schmidt, but like, where are all his friends by the time he's becoming a cop? I see both of them as like so outrageously isolated and only having each other. And so I think the Jenko Zook thing is all about like seeing yourself in another person, which I don't think is necessarily queer, but it is, maybe is not only what we want in relationships maybe, but also just in friendships,
right?
And you know, you want to hear someone say a thing you think in your head said aloud back to you, which is what they give each other. And I just thought a lot about like the tragedy of this, you know, once bully, very social bully, really having to scrounge for relationships outside of his like one coworker. It's very tragic.
Yeah, he doesn't have parents. He never gets a girlfriend. I like that he makes out with some random Miami Beach girl. Like, he randomly makes out with Dakota Johnson in the first
like,
one.
Body as like a weapon.
Yeah. That was actually great.
I mean, honestly, that was very Magic Mikey.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. I would love to be like picked up and whipped around, take out a couple of bad guys. But yeah, like he doesn't have any friends or any relationships, and like him specifically. Typically, because, you know, Schmidt has his parents, and like we said, Schmidt usually like gets the girl in these movies. So I think that is sort of helpful for the Channing of it all, which works out very nicely for us.
I mean, I feel like there's that classic trope where like the bully is like, if he bullies you for being gay, like he's gay himself.
Oh, or, you know what I mean? Like that whole thing. I hate
it. I'm not like applying that to him, but with Fran, you're talking about like the isolation. It is very much like he has nothing, and he's like driven to be like a police officer because he has no one, and he's not smart at all. You know what I mean? He's like, I'm your worst nightmare or whatever he does. You know what I mean? He's like, head is consistently empty. So like when he is any time able to get some sort of intimacy is sort of like beautiful for him. And even like the fact that even if he's like straight or whatever it is, but I just think seeing someone like accepting of like another male friend, as we've talked about, like in Magic Mike, it's like very rare to see men just be comfortable with each other on screen. So when you have that, it's nice. And like, unfortunately, I guess like a detriment of that is like, I'm not like a downside, but like immediately can be coded as queer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we talk about that all the time.
Right, exactly. Where it's like, you would love that we don't have to have like this conversation where it was just like they were outwardly gay or something, you know?
But we do because we're annoying. Right. And how in movies like Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, for example, making like a queer character like spotlight in the middle of it sort of like removes that weird semi-coding, semi-intimacy thing. But this is definitely a movie about like good male friendship, and it's nice. A theme that like has been very consistent, I feel like, through the series is how open and accepting Channing Tatum seems to be about this kind of stuff like in his life. I feel like I need to maybe blow Fran's mind and talk about how when we were conceiving the series, we were like, well, Channing Tatum is like out and bisexual, and like we all know this, and this is like a fact on the internet. And then we discovered that it's not actually a fact on the internet. Yes, and it has like just been rumors for years and years and years. And like there was never anything like legit about it. Truly insane. Felt crazy. Yes. To like discover that. I think that like a tenet of that is that a lot of his roles and a lot of like how he just is in life seems very unconcerned with the toxic masculinity aspect that a lot of actors are concerned with. And how that like has fed the rumor mill, which I think goes hand in hand, Jordan, with what you were saying about like, it's so rare for guys to just kind of be chill about it that it immediately gets coded the second that it's anything outside of the toxic realm.
When are men allowed to be like comfortable with themselves and their sexuality on screen in a way that is not to the detriment of like other people?
Right.
And so yeah, it's an immediately quick coding thing. And I mean, I think that's progressive of him to do.
Sure. Right? Yeah.
His star rose so quickly, and he was able to maintain so much more control over it than I feel like a lot of celebs do. I mean, it's women who I feel like get robbed of their image very quickly, but I think for men as well. And then I think you get something like I think Bradley Cooper has fought a lot against what he was initially pigeonholed into, but you don't see a lot of that with Channing Tatum. I feel like he's very much in control. And therefore, like, I don't know that I actually ever projected, like, a queerness onto him as, like, a celebrity figure, but, like, he's very not like other men.
Right.
That's for sure. He's really just in his own category. I don't know how to define him, which is what makes him so exciting.
There isn't, I don't think, like, as we've been saying, there isn't a celebrity really like him who is, like, so in control of their art, always as a producer, like, very fluid and comfortable in their sexuality, that's more open, you know what I mean? I'm like,
I think it's weird because it is, like, a definitely male. It's
because he's a male, aspect. For sure. Yes.
Yeah, like, I feel like if we were gonna try and find a female counterpart, they would have to do like,
is it like a Charlize?
No, but I feel like we need someone, so we need someone in similar like roles as well, and there's no one that really fills these roles.
Charlize might be closest.
Yeah
right.
I mean, like Margot Robbie with her producing label and like now being a producer,
she's
like
so
alongside being an
material.
Actress,
right?
Yeah, I don't
potentially
know.
Potentially, yeah.
It's always cool to me to see actors start production companies, though, and be involved behind the scenes, because, like, so much of the movie is riding on your shoulders, and so much of, like, the star power is you, that you might as well, like, get in behind the scenes. And then you see great stuff like Margot Robbie with Lucky Chap, or, like, Plan B and Brad Pitt, like, being able to produce things that wouldn't otherwise be produced.
Brad Pitt, like, one of our generation's, like, finest producers.
Right,
like, of the
impeccable
past, like,
taste.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like Channing Tatum now is like planning to produce everything that he's like ever involved in.
Right.
Which is cool because he seems unconcerned about his image in a good, like healthy acting specific way.
I completely agree. I think I also, as you were saying, Fran, how you kind of want him to see him be like a Soderbergh person. I think he is also so good when he sort of gives himself to a director, sort of like when he gave himself like to the Coens for like a little bit, or like the Soderberghs, like when he really just like allows himself like in his image. And even like, I think within the, like, I guess like the tenets of this movie, when he gives himself over to be like warped into an image of what people think on him and like playing on image, like with Foxcatcher, I feel like everyone kind of views him as like a beefcake. And so then he plays the beefcake that's like tortured. So Bennett Miller is able to sort of capture that like coldness and like the isolation that like someone like a Channing Tatum might feel.
He's got the range. Like we said earlier, he could maybe like be primed for something like a musical upcoming. Like he can do a variety of things.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He rocks.
A good star.
Yeah.
We love.
So
our boy.
He is our boy. He's the best. And I think he hit a really good pocket for all of us. For like we were old enough to like, you know,
understand.
Yeah.
Respect.
Yeah. And keep him as a touchstone, like during his whole career so far. Before we wrap it up, we have a little game we would like to play with you. Jordan conceived this. So
I'm sorry.
It's his brainchild, but I actually did the work. So
look, I came up with the first game that we did.
Yes, and I played it with the guest, so it's time to switch it up a little bit. Channing
Tatum tables have turned.
Has been in a lot of movies, and his characters have some of the most ridiculous names that I have ever heard on screen. So we're going to play the Channing Tatum name game. I have compiled 10 Channing Tatum characters. 6 of these are real character names that he has played. 4 of them are fake. Your job, both of you, is to tell me if it's real or if it's fake. 3 strikes, you're out. Okay. And I'm going to like ping pong back and forth between you two.
Okay.
Okay. So, Fran, as the guest, you're up first. And I feel like the name of this name game is just like vote with your heart. You know it to be true. Okay.
Vote with your Tatum.
Here we go. Rowdy Sparks, real character name or fake character name?
Fake.
It's real.
Fuck.
It's from
in what?
2005's Supercross.
Fuck.
Okay. Yep. I'm screwed.
Jordan.
Okay, yeah.
Duke Orsino, real or fake?
Duke Duke I know is real from G.I. Joe, but I don't know about Orsino, but I'm going to say real.
Real. It's from She's the Man.
Oh, 2 Dukes? Fuck.
Yeah.
Great.
All right.
Wait, that's iconic. Who else can play a Duke?
Nobody. All right. Fran, Seamus McManus, real or fake?
That's fake.
It's fake. Good job.
Oh my God.
I didn't have to extrapolate that far. He plays some really Irish sounding guy in Fighting. Sure, I got that from. All right, Jordan. Mm-hmm. Conrad S. Hauser, real or fake?
Fake.
It's real. That's G.I. Joe, dude.
That's the G.I. Joe one?
Yeah.
I give up.
Okay. All right. Yeah, no. This might be an accidentally very easy one. Pretty Boy Floyd, real or fake?
That's real.
I cannot believe that is a real name. So it's the best name I've ever heard.
He's a pretty boy.
Public Enemies. Jordan, Zed Hargrave, real or fake?
Real.
Fake. But once again, I didn't really extrapolate that much. He plays a character named Zip in The Dilemma.
See, I was going to say that sounds like his Jupiter Ascending name. So I forget who his name is in Jupiter Ascending.
It's actually pretty boring.
Is it really?
Yeah. Mm. All right. Fran, Jonathan, Milk White. Real or fake?
I think that's real.
It's real. It's from this horrible Al Pacino film called The Son of No One, which Jordan recently watched.
Yes.
And it sounds like a horrible, horrible time.
Imagine like having, you know, like when you have Al Pacino in your film, you want him to yell at least like once. Imagine bottling the man where he never yells at all.
Ugh. Why would you do that?
It's bad. Anyways,
total waste. All right. You guys are doing great. We're almost done.
I have 2 strikes. I'm doing terrible, actually.
Jordan, Chad de Gaulle.
100% real.
That's fake.
Fuck!
He has never played a character named Chad.
Really?
Never.
Okay. See, my whole thesis for this game was that he feels like he would play only Chads. Exactly.
He is a Chad.
Like if you look at a meme, like Channing Tatum's body type is literally like the Chad body type.
But he has never played a character named Chad.
Well,
all
Frank,
right.
Congratulations.
We're going to finish this out.
Yes.
All right, Fran, Marlon Flyer, real or fake?
Fake?
That's fake.
Okay, good.
Very good job. That was, I don't know who he plays in Don John, but it's something along those lines, but that is fake. All right.
What are they?
Jordan, I know that you're out, but I think that you can get this. So it's the last one. Burt Gurney, real or fake? Hail Caesar.
Yes.
That's 100% real.
Knew that one.
Good job, everybody.
Look, that movie is the greatest distillation. Like, I just, like, love going through the credits of that movie and, like, reading the names of who everyone's playing.
The Coens must have had so much fun.
All of their movies are just so well named.
Yes.
So good. Anyways.
That's kind of an underrated, like, screenwriting skill, is giving your characters good names.
Yes.
Yeah, totally. Because,
like, they can't be too good. They have to, like, feel at just a little bit believable.
Right.
But you want the spin. Gurney. You want them to be smooth.
That's fun.
Yeah. Jordan.
Yes.
Would you like to guess the letterbox rating?
I'd love to.
For
Fran,
22
you're
Jump
welcome
Street.
To jump in as well if you have a guess.
Oh, at the, like, at the average?
Every episode, Jordan guesses the average, so we can see what the hot
Everyone
critics
thinks.
Of Letterboxd feel about this movie.
How our fingers are on the pulse. Can I get 21 or no?
No, you cannot.
Okay. I'm going to give it, like, a 3.3.
Okay. 3.3 average. Fran, would you care to hazard a guess?
I'll go 2.9.
All right. Jordan? Congratulations. It's a 3.3.
I have missed, like, the past, like, 7 weeks. So it feels great to be back.
And the past 2 weeks, the Magic Mics have been, like, extremely
Very disappointing.
Low. 22 Jump Street is higher than either Magic Mike average.
That sucks.
What would you give Magic Mike XXL?
That's a 5-star film
okay.
for me.
Thank
right?
you.
There's nothing I want to change about it.
Right? It's a perfect movie.
Which is how I decide on the 5. Is the 5 is like, can I come up with a way to make this any better? And if I cannot do it, that's 5.
Yes.
It doesn't matter the sort of genre or whatever.
100%.
I throw out 5s like nobody's business.
I mean, we're throwing out 5s like we're at
a Magic Mike
fucking strip convention. That's
oh,
what we're at.
That was okay.
I was
that
sweaty.
Was
I'm
good.
Sorry. I had it. I lost. Anyways.
Hey, speaking of ratings.
Great. Where's
thank
it landing?
You. We are going to go around and give our queer quadrant rating. So, like, out of 5 stars, where do we think this lands on the queer quadrant scale? Does it deserve a spot in the Hall of Fame? We actually haven't even covered that yet. So no. our current 5s are like Talented Mr. Ripley, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. I think we gave Rocket Man 5 stars.
Well, I mean, it's like hard to not give Rocket Man 5. Yeah.
You gotta. but I would say on the QQ scale, this is, I'm going to give it a 3.5.
Oh.
So I think it's the highest that I've given it so far.
Yes.
I do think that there is, like, weirdly an extremely strong undercurrent of, like, acceptance and, you know, intimacy and emotion and not being afraid of, like, the homoerotic side of yourself. And it's so romance based, even if it is occasionally playing it for laughs, but it's doing it in such a genuine way. And I feel like it gets a lot of points just on sheer, like, consistency. It pops up again and again. How are you feeling, Jordan?
I'm gonna go with a 3.
I think.
Yeah. I think it's so there. Oh, you know what? Fuck it.
No. Stick to your guns.
I'll stick to my 22 guns. My two guns, like Denzel
Thank
Washington.
Thank you. Thank
and
you very
Mark
much.
Mark Wahlberg?
Right? I've never seen that movie.
I think it's Mark Wahlberg opposite him. We've kind of, like, touched on it. It's just, like, very nice to see, like, intimacy and acceptance on screen. Fuck it, 3.5. I just think for him headbutting is fun.
Okay.
3.25. I don't know. I'm going to wave back and forth. I just think there's a lot to it. And it's like them never saying that they're not queer and that they're just, like, accepted, you know, and, like, how comfortable they are with themselves and with sexuality, sort of, like, with these jokes. Obviously, like, they're intended to be jokes, but I think, like, intentionality can be done in a way that's, like, harmful and or, like, helpful. And with this movie, the jokes aren't in a, like, a demeaning way, which I think is nice. Because especially because with, like, making jokes about, like, gay men or whatever, like, it's a very easy thing to go back to, like, throughout time. It's just, like, you go through, like, a lot of blockbusters from this era
or
a couple years earlier. And it's like, oh, these jokes haven't aged well. And so, like, while there were definitely jokes in this that haven't aged well, most of them, especially the ones with queer undertones, shockingly have. So
great. Love it. Fran, where do you land?
I'll go three. I think it holds up way better than it has any right to. To me, it's still just more like a weird sort of intimacy thing, but male intimacy, forgotten pasts, that whole thing. But I was surprised to, like, be as comforted by both these films as I was.
Yeah, they are kind of weirdly, like, good feel-good movies.
Totally.
A little piece of, like, escapist cinema, shockingly.
Right. And, you know, like, unlike a lot of films from this era, they haven't aged, like, shockingly horribly in an unwatchable way. So you can kind of throw them on and be like, oh, right, I remember this. Like you were saying, you feel like you have the gentle nostalgia to it.
I felt like when I put on the first 21 Jump Street, I was like very nervous going in. But then when like certain jokes started hitting, like I immediately felt like I was like back in high school at like a friend's house eating Domino's and stuff. And like for a movie to kind of like pull that memory back is fun and nice, and especially like in a way than when you don't turn on it. So
right, you know this movie like literally made so much money, so good for them. That I don't think a 23 Jump Street is ever going to happen. It's kind of been too long, and Lord and Miller are
well, they wanted Men in
things.
Black X crossover? 22 yeah, so it would have been MIB 23,
which is such a crazy crossover,
far too sweaty.
Yeah,
yes, not good.
Well, do you know about the Channing Tatum box office email?
Oh,
yes. I was very recently reminded of this. I had completely forgot about it. I think like 2 days ago someone reminded me of this. I went and looked it back up. It's so good.
I was going to say, do you want to give us a little background? Because I'm not super familiar with it, but I do feel like I saw it randomly the other day.
Just when, you know, the Sony leak was really the greatest part of 2014 for me. I always loved the Smurfs PowerPoint of like what audiences will get out of the Smurfs. There were a lot of good things that came out of that, but one of them was this email that they had sent, I don't know, about 22 Jump Street, like, making a fuck ton of money. And Channing Tatum responded, like, in all caps, F you, Ted, second of all time, biatch. I think it was, like, the second highest grossing, like, R-rated comedy is what it is. Yeah. Come on, Jump Streeters, we got Cate Blanchett with this box office bitches. And then it's lines and lines and lines of ha 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 in all caps.
It's the greatest person. It's so good.
He thought that was so funny. Like he was writing that, he's like, "This is fucking great."
And you know what? It is.
Yeah.
There's no better comedy.
I would just love to. Like, just hanging out with him would be so much fun.
That's what I'm telling you. Like he has such like a pure sense of self that like you know that if you hung out with him, you would get the authentic Channing Tatum experience.
100%.
Like I feel like there is no veneer there.
Yes.
In the best way. But yeah, I mean, this movie made a crazy amount of money, $331 million worldwide. Domestic, like adjusted for 2021, $214 million domestic. Like Jesus. That is so much money.
Off a TV show that people watched. I mean, I don't know how popular it was. Fran's mom. But
yeah, that's about it.
Yeah, no, I feel like it was sort of like, I don't know, I feel like if I asked my parents about 21 Jump Street, they'd be like, oh, I know it exists, but yeah. I never actually watched it. Despite that, we are not getting a Men in Black 22 Jump Street crossover. I also don't think we are getting an apparently female reboot of 22 Jump Street, which was at one point set up with Tiffany Haddish and Awkwafina. But that was back in 2015, and crickets on that front, so I don't think
that
it's happening.
That thing's dead. That's 100% dead.
Dude, Awkwafina just looks like a high schooler. It wouldn't even be that funny.
You could probably, you could throw her in, and still, now.
Yeah, but, like, everyone would believe it. Yeah. She'd be able to go so deep.
So deep. 22 Jump Street middle school?
Yeah. There would be no stakes.
I hate the female reboots. I don't want any of that. I don't think women should be in movies is sort of what it comes down to. But no, I
agree with you.
I can't think of a movie in the last couple of years I've hated more than Ocean's 8, honestly.
Why did they fumble the bag so bad?
And it should have been so good. It should have been so good.
It should have been Soderbergh. And if he didn't want to touch it, they shouldn't have done it.
Mm-hmm. I would be down for it if they ever did like anything, one, good or B, interesting with them. But like, it's like they're so afraid of women like headlining a movie that it's doomed before it starts, because like it's like you, the studio, greenlit this, and it seems like there is nothing else that you would like rather be doing less than creating this film. It's so unfortunate. But now they're just like rebooting every IP that you could find, so I think that we have gotten past that stage of cinema.
Phew.
Yeah, thank God.
Next week, well, we've already teased it, but
next week we are closing it out with The Eagle, and it's just the two of us, so it's going to be a loopy fucking episode.
Can't wait to discuss.
What a way to send it off.
Yes,
we'll
100%.
See. Neither of us have actually seen this film yet, and to be completely candid, we have recorded 3 episodes of this miniseries in 3 days, and so my brain is completely
Channing
fried. So I have no idea what
it's going to look like
in like 2 weeks
when
we actually record that one.
I'm excited.
But tune in next week week for that. It's going to be a good time. Fran, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
A delight.
Nothing but a great time. If people want to find you, where should they look for you?
Everything is simply my name. So you can just type in Fran Hoffner onto any of the websites you like, and I'll probably be there. Except for LinkedIn.
Iconic.
Which I'm not on.
Wow.
LinkedIn is low-key the new Facebook. I see so much shit on there that should not be on LinkedIn.
I have not
I
been
walked
on
away
in
like
years.
5 years ago. I'm not going back.
Please Never. Don't. Do it's not. Turned into like that weird, like the whole subsect of Rise and Grind Twitter has migrated onto LinkedIn. And every time you go on, people are like, no one's doing it like me. Nobody has the kind of drive that I do.
Just everyone's posting like their Mark Wahlberg daily like routine.
Yeah, basically.
Well, yeah, people are like writing on there, which is disgusting to me.
It's so That's weird. So
gross. It's like I have a new LinkedIn essay. Shut up. Nobody so I'm not there, cares. But I'm everywhere else.
Amazing.
So notably, can't find her on LinkedIn. Anywhere else is great.
Don't try to connect with me, but you can follow.
Love that.
Important.
You are great. Everyone should check you out and read Bright Wall, Dark Room.
Yeah, totally. I'm just editing there right now, which is a treat because that just means I get to read everything and I don't have to do any of my own thinking or, you know, mental deep dives.
Right.
Saving yourself.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
You can also find us on Twitter. I am at Brooke B. Solomon.
At Jordan H. Gus.
And we are together at Queer Quadrant. And you can find this podcast on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. Rate, review, subscribe, tweet at us. Tell us how you feel about Channing Tatum. Tell us how you feel about the male intimacy of this movie. Give us your hottest Channing takes because we need some new ones.
Tatum takes.
Not
there
bad.
It is. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Hashtag Tatum takes. Oh, yep. It's like a tongue twister.
Tatum takes. Great.
All right.
And Brooke, I think as always, I think we should remember who died for our sins.
Cynthia.
Cynthia.
Oh, but it's Jesus.
Well, Jesus died for our sin-thias.